Star jump sequence terminates, Captain.
Get the gravitational dampers online and open the blast shield.
Aye, sir.
Bring us in closer.
Aye, aye, sir. Moving us in on sublight drive.
Extreme magnification.
Nice.
The center of the galaxy. And there's our black hole.
The experience of a lifetime, Captain.
Let me put this on audio. You should be able to hear the magnetic resonance.
This is it, ladies and gentlemen. The edge of time and space, where the impossible can happen. Welcome to the event horizon.
Good morning, or afternoon, or evening, whatever is relevant for the part of the world you are in. Indeed, welcome to the event horizon, where the impossible happens. Join us each week at this time as we delve into the worlds of science fiction, fantasy, and science fact in all their forms. I'm your host, Gene Turnbow.
And I am your other host, Susan Fox.
And with us are Jordan Burke and Peter Burke, and we are talking to them about the new book, The Time Stream Verdict, by Jordan Burke. Welcome to the show, guys.
Thank you so much for having us.
Got two members of the dynasty here.
Yeah.
And both authors.
And both science fiction authors.
Yeah,
that's pretty good stuff. Jordan, I had trouble putting your book down.
Thank you.
I'll have to confess, I have not finished the book.
But
she has. And at least that stops me from blabbing out spoilers.
Well, even if you did, they wouldn't make any sense, because every time you turn around in this book, something unexpected, I mean really unexpected, happens. And the annoying one who always sees the stuff coming, not this time.
Okay, that's good to know, actually, because as I wrote it, I was like, everyone's going to see this coming, aren't they? But
nope.
Maybe there's a few twists and turns along the way that are a little less predictable. But yeah, I appreciate the kind words.
Yeah, it reads really simply. You know, when you start out, it's like, oh, this is a crime drama. Okay, I'm familiar with this. And then it takes a hard left turn. And then it goes, it takes
it's in a courtroom, and then it isn't.
Yeah, it takes a vertical shift and turns itself inside out. You know, away we go. So, yeah, courtroom drama. This is something that both you and your father have experience with.
And the grandfather as well. I mean, tell us about the dynasty, Peter.
Well, my dad was a brilliant writer, an incredible father, far better writer than I'll ever be. And it was just magnificent growing up in that world and watching him create scripts for, you know, classic shows like Mission Impossible, which had a sort of sci-fi element in some of the episodes, and Columbo. And I clearly remember him coming home one day and saying that he had a meeting coming up to talk about the motion picture version of Star Trek. Not the one that at all that they ended up making. This was years before Star Wars. And so they shelved, but I was all excited. And then we got to write together, and we wrote like three or four screenplays and collaborated right up until the end of, you know, many years ago. He was writing a new novel at 92 and going strong. So a lot of inspiration.
I think everybody who watched any kind of crime or caper TV in the 60s or 70s has seen the work of Howard Burke.
And what you probably wouldn't know is that his second novel was actually a science fiction book. It's called The Sun Grows Cold, which was not a literal title, but definitely sci-fi. And then the scripts that we wrote together were all sci-fi, and those are the ones that I later novelized into the Time Lock series.
Uh-huh.
They were originally called Quick Time, but Apple seems to have dibs on that name, so we didn't want to get sued.
Right, right. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah, you should have sued them.
Mission Impossible is definitely sci-fi adjacent, if nothing else.
Yeah, exactly. In fact, he wrote an episode, I think it was called Robot, you know, and so there were definitely elements of that in there. Mm-hmm. And these are shows I love watching. It's not like, oh, your father's show is on, you've got to watch, you know, the making of furniture in the 1800s or something that wouldn't be of interest to me. I love watching it. I love, in fact, his first Columbo aired 50 years ago, just last month.
Oh, wow.
By John's Early Life with Patrick McGoohan, yeah.
So, wow.
Patrick McGoohan was in Columbo?
Oh, yeah. This was his first Columbo episode. He won an Emmy for it. And he developed, as my dad did, and I later did, a good friendship with Peter Falk. And he ended up being the guest murderer and or director on multiple Columbos, the original ones, and then when they revived the series in the late 80s, which is when I ended up working with Peter Falk by total coincidence. So,
wow.
Yeah, like total coincidence in showbiz.
No, it was. I was handling his public relations. It had no connection to my dad at all, although they were still good friends. And Peter was pretty much like Columbo off screen, too. Not that he wasn't a great actor, but, you know, it's a...
He was,
Peter,
he was playing himself.
Well, I mean, he was great, but I would have conversation. You know, Peter, your USA Today interview was at one. Oh, is that today? I can't. You know, there were Columbo moments, but all delightful.
So, Jordan, that makes you following in the footsteps of a grand tradition.
That's not always an easy life.
Yeah, well, if anything, it was, it kind of paved the path. So it maybe made it a little easier to see that there was, an outlet for creativity and sci-fi storytelling that, you know, not everyone has the opportunity to get.
Boy, I'll say it's not an easy life to be a creative in anything and to have the kind of opportunities and the kind of exposure that you've had. It's a wonderful thing.
So what past science fiction inspired you besides any written by blood relatives?
Right. I'll exclude those, as inspiring as they were. I pretty much exclusively read science fiction and especially time travel. I mean, it's not a coincidence that that's my first entry into the genre. And, you know, too many to name over the years, but certainly like the classics, the big guys like Arthur C. Clarke and Asimov and Heinlein, were huge, and a lot of recent writers as well, like Andy Weir and John Scalzi, who I know has been on this show before.
Yes.
And Blake Crouch, and so many more, but like there was a lot of reading authors by those or reading novels by those authors and others and thinking to myself, like, I don't know if I can write as well as them, and I doubt that I do, but I certainly feel like I have a story that is of equal interest to me, a time travel purist, mm-hmm. and hopefully that is true for, you know, people of a similar mindset.
I did notice that you addressed the grandfather paradox trope almost right away, and you handily dismissed it.
I got that out of the way pretty early. I think it's kind of the first thing people think of when they're thinking about time travel and mm-hmm. paradoxes, and I mean the protagonist of the Time Stream Verdict is not himself an expert in the genre necessarily. Mm-hmm. I mean, he prides himself that he saw Back to the Future a few weeks earlier. He's from 1985 intentionally because of Back to the Future.
Right.
I figured I would kind of, you know, dismiss it to a degree, but only for it to become more relevant as the story goes on, perhaps.
And that's where I get myself into trouble because I have not finished the book and I don't know how that applies.
He doesn't have to go 88 miles per hour.
Ah,
that's true.
That doesn't come into it.
There are no flying cars in this book. Well, though that also is mentioned on like page one.
I'll
edit it. What the grandfather paradox could have happened. The big question is the past already set, or is it fluid? That's one of the big questions. Can you go back and change the past is the big question, and I'm not sure we got an answer.
I would say that it's not a spoiler to say that that is kind of the central theme of the story, and you're right that we probably don't get an answer. I think the by the end of the story, the reader might have an opinion, the protagonist Aaron might have his own opinion, but and the author certainly has an opinion within the uh-huh. the world of the novel. I certainly don't have any scientific knowledge to make any statements about the real world, but in the framework of this story, I think the kind of the underlying theme that an astute sci-fi or time travel reader will pick up on is exactly what you just identified, which is, is the timeline mutable? Is it, can you change the past by going, by traveling into the past? And the story, basically everything that happens in the story is the result of disagreement or exploration of whether or not that is true.
Well, just to sort of lay the cards on the table for the listening audience, the grandfather paradox, if you're not familiar with it, it's what if you go back in time and kill your own grandfather? Do you then cease to exist? And if you do, then who went back and killed your grandfather?
Yeah. Or in my case, if I go back and kill my grandfather, do I ever write a book?
Mm-hmm.
It got a little morbid, but the joke I think works.
Well, and the whole question of the multiverse, you know, mm-hmm. Each decision we make exploding into an uncountable number of other possible universes as that additionally bifurcates, and the timeline as experienced by a single observer varies from individual to individual as they travel backward and forward in time, even over the same events.
Well, I don't think Loki invented that, and I don't think Larry Niven invented it either.
Well, no, but that's actually the work of astrophysicists.
Mm.
So, that's the work of science. That is an area of scientific discovery at the moment.
Well, until one of the astrophysicists travels back and forth in time and tells us, it'll be a little hard to really ascertain.
Yeah. Well, we know traveling to the future in a sense is possible, like with Einsteinian physics, but mm-hmm. not really the same as kind of the fictional version of time travel. Or, you know, Interstellar, is the movie, is a great example of what I was referencing. But
mm-hmm.
yeah, it's more fun when there's, you know, a H.G. Wells style time machine and you get to mm-hmm. press some buttons yeah. and go back and get into a tube and, you know,
with a lot of brass rails, and shiny
yeah.
buttons and
yeah.
things.
Traveling near a black hole is just less engaging, at least to me. I'm nothing against that one film, but I like the gadgets.
Gadgets are fun.
So you've been a science fiction fan from way back then. It's just in your DNA at this point.
It sure is. I mean, certainly the tentpole movies, your Star Warses and Star Treks and the aft mentioned Back to the Future, and you know, just anything that's a sci-fi movie clicked early. And then in the last 10 years, I realized that I like to read about the real world history of technology, nonfiction and fictional sci-fi. So like, you know, I only get to read so many books in my life, so I might as well read the ones that give me the most satisfaction.
Yeah, that makes the most sense to me. I've got so many questions. One of the questions I wanted to ask you is, start to finish, how long did it take you to write?
The time stream vary.
Yeah. So I started it in July 2021 with a goal of finishing it by June 2022, and for a specific purpose. And the story is actually starts a little earlier than that. My dad and I were playing tennis one day, and in between sets, he said to me, an idea popped into his head, like, what if there was a jury of time travelers in a story? So this actually started with his idea, with that little seed of an idea, and he probably forgot about it like a day later, but for whatever reason that stuck with me. And as I saw my dad's success in the next few months with publishing his first of the Time Lock series, and you know, finding a publisher and going through the process of editing and choosing a cover and all of that. I saw that, and I had this story that I was continually building on. Like, what if there was a jury? That would mean there was a crime. That, what if it was a murder? What if the murder was a time travel murder? What if the victim was the inventor of time travel? And it just snowballed from there. And so at some point in July 2021, I had a young child. He was napping a lot. It was mid pandemic. I had the motivation. I had the time. And I put
because everybody had lots of time.
Yeah, lots of time. It was perfect set of circumstances.
Uh-huh.
So I put the proverbial pen to paper, or keyboard to Google Docs. yeah, there you go. And started writing. So it took about 11 months in that first draft of the manuscript. And the reason that I had set a deadline of June of the next year is that my intention was to present the finished book or manuscript to my dad as a Father's Day present. And I finished a few weeks early and put it in a manila envelope and handed it over to him. And, I'll turn it over to him to for the rest of that story.
A couple of things that you should know is that nobody other than Jordan's wife had any idea that he was working on a novel. I mean, Jordan is a very successful computer programmer. It's not like this is, his entire career at all. So we had no idea. And then, it was a total surprise that he had written a book at all, much less that I had the tiny little bit to do with it. And then came, a bit of a nerve-wracking moment for me. It's like, okay, what if it's not great? Well, he's my son. I love him. I want to be honest with him. And 2 pages in, I realized he's an incredible writer, better than I am. I mean, I had nothing but praise, all sincere. I know I sound a little biased, but beautifully, beautifully written. And, I helped a little bit from there with some stuff at the end, but I, sent it off to our publisher, Ingram Elliott, right away, because they had been so great with my books, and I'm still working with them, and they loved it too. And there you go. But, what a surprise.
Yeah, that's awesome. Yeah. And what a relief as well, I imagine.
On both sides, yeah.
Well, listen, Jordan's always been hugely creative as a songwriter, and, and I knew he could write well, but, to suddenly go from no books to a 350-page brilliant book, one of the best gifts I ever could possibly hope for, other than Jordan himself and our other son, Daniel, and their wonderful wives and our grandchildren.
Aww.
Sorry. Cue the violins.
Aww, that's so sweet.
What's it like to work with your publisher?
They're great. I mean, they're a traditional publisher. It's not a self-publishing company. It's run by two women, and they work seamlessly together, and they have a team of editors who have, I think Jordan would agree, I don't think we worked with the same editors, but they were wonderful. When I first wrote Time Lock, I sent it around, and I had 2 replies, of interest. One publisher said, attached is a contract, which was great. But then Ingram Elliott came back with like 5 pages of notes, because they had really
notes,
read it.
Because they, wow.
And they had ideas, and I knew, of course, I've got to go with them. The other people probably hadn't even read the book. And they've been great ever since. And Time Lock is, there have been 2 of them so far. There are 3 mm-hmm. more that I've written that'll come out annually. And they just published another courtroom drama, not sci-fi, called First Line of Defense that I wrote actually years before any of these books. So they're wonderful. I think Jordan would probably agree.
Well, I keep Absolutely. Every manuscript, right? If they're sitting in a drawer, eventually they will pay for themselves.
Yeah, I think we both found a partnership that is really perfect for us. I didn't really look at any other publishers. The synergy was just too obvious to pass up, especially because they're a family operation as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly enhanced the father-son connection that we're talking about now.
Oh yeah, I can see that. I mean, I can see how important that would be.
And I think one of the reasons that they, you know, that it worked out so well with them is that they have a keen interest in developing all their projects into films or TV shows. And at least in my case, Time Lock, as I mentioned, was based on a screenplay. So I came to them not only with a novel, but the screenplay finished, you know, that I wrote with my dad. So that was appealing to them. And we're still trying to get that off the ground. Mm-hmm. And then three of the sequels are also based on other screenplays my dad and I wrote that weren't intended as screenplays, but they were similar enough that I kind of wove them into the series. And it's just been a great relationship and continues to be. Now we got to write a screenplay version of the Time Stream Verdict. Mm. But Jordan's a little busy with a full-time job and two young children.
Jordan, what was it like working with your editor? The experience can vary quite a lot. I mean, there are different kinds of editors, for one thing. There's the grammar and spelling, you know,
the copy editor,
and then there's a story editor. And what did yours have to say about your work, and what did you do with that editor?
Right. Well, the scariest editor that I sent it to was probably my wife. Mm. And scary because I was so afraid for her to read what she'd seen me been working on for the prior 2 years. And I sent it to her because she is a literature major. She works at the UCLA English department. She's very qualified. And I said to her, thank you for reading it. It's probably the worst book you will ever read or ever have read. And that's not even like trying to be humble. It's just because she reads like, you know, great stuff exclusively. Mm-hmm. But because of her skills, I sent it to her actually before the publisher ever saw it. And she did a lot of the copy editing. And I asked her not to provide any story notes because I didn't think I could take quote Back to the Future. I didn't think I could take that kind of rejection. But that definitely cleared a lot of the basics that, you know, I missed here or there. And she did have some great ideas for improving the prose here and there. So that actually turned out great. But the formal editor through the publisher was, I thought would be terrifying. I thought they'd come back and say, like, you need to scrap this entire section and come back with something else. But she was actually wonderful and completely understood the writing style and the story, and her notes were generally, or I would say exclusively, like, you know, made sense. I agreed with, ultimately not too bad. The publisher themselves, before it ever got to the copy editing, or like proofreading stage, also had a bunch of suggestions, like my dad mentioned, when he submitted his manuscript, and those, all of them turned out to be absolutely the right decision. Especially in terms of enhancing the ending and having a more satisfying conclusion. So everything in that last couple chapters was either some my dad's feedback or the publisher's feedback.
Mm-hmm.
It's one of the unspoken rules of professional writing that books are not written, they are rewritten.
Mm-hmm.
And I see the validation in that in what you've just told me.
Absolutely. Yeah. If there was a chapter that I read less than like 100 times, I would be surprised.
What about the choice of telling the story in first person? That seems like a bold move.
You know, I think first person as an entryway was very helpful because I could kind of channel my own voice or my own thoughts or my own humor. But breaking news, the book that I'm writing now, which I don't know when I'll finish it, but it is in third person. So I'm not continuing the first person trend, but partially to challenge myself and see if I'm capable of third person. But it's still, it's not an omniscient narrator, so it's still kind of the protagonist's viewpoint.
That was going to be my next question, is working on next?
Man.
And you've just told us you're working on another book.
As you can imagine, it's also sci-fi. It's also time travel adjacent. It's like time freeze, kind of a subgenre of time travel. It's different. It's more of a high school coming of age story set within the sci-fi universe, but it's still early phases. I'm probably only 10-15% of the way done, and it's been much more of a slow go because instead of having a surplus of time, I now have in addition to the full-time job, two kids and just a lot more going on. So maybe I'll finish it in a few years, I hope, because I'm just as passionate about the story.
I know in high school I'd want to stop time because I'd get up in the morning and realize I hadn't finished the essay. So if I could stop time, write the essay, start time again, go to school.
Yeah, I know. If only it were that easy.
Yeah, I often feel like that. I'm just working on my own book. It's most books are written by the pure magic of making sure your butt is in the chair a certain amount of time every day to work on it. Even if you write like 50 words, it's 50 words more than you had.
Yeah, that's exactly what it comes down to. Like with Time Stream Verdict, it was like 20 minutes here, 30 minutes there, weird hours. Like sometimes after my kids were asleep, sometimes where they were napping, sometimes, you know, with the TV on in the background and my wife was watching Law and Order or SVU, which actually was pretty helpful for the trial scenes, you know, and I'll take what I can get. I was even writing at one point not during working hours, but during a work event. I was waiting for someone else to deploy some code and wrote chapter two. So, you know.
Yeah, that's great. It's like the boss comes by, you look like you're doing nothing. Is, hey, get back to work. Compiling. Yeah. Okay, carry on.
I'm good friends with my boss, who was the person that was my boss at the time. And when I told him I wrote a book, he looked at me and was like, how? Because he knows I was working you know, as much as I was.
Yeah, that's awesome. Ladies and gentlemen, we have been talking to both Peter and Jordan Burke about Jordan Burke's book, The Time Stream Verdict. Thank you for being on the show with us. I've got to go back and finish this book now because
and Time Lock as well.
Oh, and Time Lock as well.
I've already ordered it.
Yeah, good stuff. So I'm really looking forward to seeing what happens next. This is the fact that your publisher is actively engaged in developing properties as motion pictures as well is a fascinating development. And yeah, time travel movies are typically hard sells, but this one's got something special to it. And I think you might be having some fun with it in the next 5 or 6 years.
I would love for either of us or both of us to return to your show as, you know, TV show creators or showrunners, but we'll see what happens, or movie. But yeah, I mean, there is a world out there for time travel on screen, even in 2024. I mean, Dark Matter this year and a few others certainly were inspiring. And but yeah, it would be incredible to see either of these stories or any of these stories on screen.
Jordan and Peter Burke, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you very much.
Thanks, Susan. Thanks, Gene.
You have been listening to episode 279 of Sci-Fi Dot Radio's production of The Event Horizon for November 16th, 2024. Our guests this evening have been Jordan and Peter Burke, and we have been discussing Jordan's new novel, The Time Stream Verdict. This show will air again tomorrow, November 17th at 4 p.m. Pacific, 7 p.m. Eastern, and again on the upcoming Thursday and Saturday mornings at 4 a.m. Pacific, 7 a.m. Eastern. After all of the airtimes have passed, you will find this episode and others on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Podbay FM, Pandora, Stitcher, Amazon Music, iHeartRadio, and on our own website at sci-fi.radio. If you enjoyed the programming you have just heard, please consider visiting patreon.com/sci-fi-radio and becoming a patron of the station. We are listener-supported sci-fi and fantasy fandom radio, and your contributions go to paying our DJs, our production team, the writers for our Geek News website, our business operation fees, our music licensing, and a lot more. We have been broadcasting continuously since 2009, and we are thankful for the support of listeners just like you. That URL is, again, patreon.com/sci-fi-radio. The Event Horizon on sci-fi.radio. It's sci-fi for your Wi-Fi.